What does it mean to be an equestrian? It's more than just being a fan of horses. It's the riders, coaches, owners, barn staff, grooms, and other support staff. But it's also the people, family, and friends who make up the whole equestrian team. And this podcast is for all of you. I am so excited to be here with you as we explore life in and outside of the show ring. I'm Tracy Mitchell, and I'm here to help you hit your stride. Welcome to this episode of Hitting Your Stride, and thank you for tuning in. Today's episode is the one I promised all of you listeners about a month ago, you know, where I promised I would have on a guest who could give us some great insight and inspiration into our own fitness and nutrition. My guest today is Ryan Mitra. Ryan has more than 20 years of experience coaching and training athletes from beginners all the way up to Olympians. Ryan worked full-time as a personal trainer for 15 years, both for The Good Life and then his own business, Breakthrough Sports and Fitness. Currently, Ryan is the head strength and conditioning coach for the women's and men's Western University's rowing team. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride, Ryan.
Well, thank you very much, Tracy, for the welcome. I've been looking forward to having a conversation with you. It's, of course, been a while, so it's going to be great to catch up. And I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yes, I think this is going to be a good one. You and I have known each other for a while. We've worked. I have had the pleasure of working with you, so I know of which you of what your capabilities and that whole experience was awesome. And we might even touch on that as we go through this conversation.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, exactly. So before we get into it, can you share a bit more about your journey into fitness and nutrition?
Well, my journey into fitness and nutrition began quite some time ago when I was about 10 years old. I was a kid who was never into exercise, fitness, any of that. I was the one that showed up to track and field day with a doctor's note, right? I had exercise-induced asthma. I don't think I actually had it. I think I was just out of shape. Right? And then, you know, by the time I was 10 and I gained a little bit too much weight, I decided, you know, I have to do something about this. So I just started biking, right? And biking was the easiest thing to do at first, right? It was nice, gentle, easy to go. It was always a lot of fun, right? Like I started a little bit of weight loss, started getting into fitness. And then by middle school, I tried out for the rugby team, right? And, you know, rugby was, it was a good sport, but it wasn't something that really sort of resonated with me. It wasn't something I could imagine myself, you know, doing, right, the rest of my life, right? Like, who wants to get hit in the head, you know, that much, right? So I did do rugby, and I did cycling and swimming and, you know, all those sports, and started focusing on diet a little bit more. But it was in high school, and actually just the summer before high school, that I discovered this sport that I took all the way up to a high level of university, which was rowing. So rowing was one of those, you know, I grew up on a lake. I always loved being on the water. I didn't like canoeing, right? Like, it was just like, who's going to just use their arms all the time, right? But rowing was one of those sports that kind of aligned to cycling because, you know, contrary to popular belief, it's actually a pushing sport more than it is a pulling sport.
Okay.
It's highly dependent on your legs. And so it's one of those ones that just really resonated with me. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I did it all through high school and into university. I rode for the University of Western Ontario, right? And I ended up going to 3 Canadian University National Championships.
Nice.
While I was rowing, right? Like a big part of rowing is kind of, you know, it's not a natural movement. It's not really it's not like, you know, going from walking to running and getting into track and field. So there is quite a lot of learning involved, right? And in doing so, I actually got my coaching levels as well. And then that was my first experience within coaching. And I coached a master's women's 4, right? The average age was about 52 years old in that boat, all the way to a Canadian Henley gold, right? And that's where I really fell in love with coaching.
Wow. Right? So
I don't think you know that story, actually.
No.
That's
cool.
Yeah. So that's really where it all began for me. And then from rowing coaching, I transitioned into training, right? Because you can't coach rowing all year round in Canada. It's a little bit difficult. And so I got into the dry land training, and then I really got into training, resistance training, strength training. And once I was into strength training, I thought, you know what, maybe I could make a go of it as a personal trainer, which I did. And then I went to Good Life, right? Like I trained there for a while, and then I opened up my own business. And then I ended up getting involved with Western rowing again, but this time as a strength and conditioning coach. And that's what I currently do right now.
What a great combination. I mean, you get to combine your passion with the rowing, which is just so cool. And then, yes, I mean, like I said, I experienced your ability as a trainer firsthand. It was, there were many growling moments. I'm sure you are very good at what you do. What a great combination. Yeah, you and I worked together, I think it was a couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it probably felt a little bit longer than a couple of years, especially in the beginning. I'm sure there were a lot of workouts that you kind of dreaded going into, especially if you're doing lower body, right? But I'd like to believe that you got great results from working out. And I mean, the thing is, you really invested yourself in the process of getting fit, right? And that's a really important thing for people to do. I can't do the work for you, right? So you have to find, not just a goal that somebody's excited about, but a way of getting to that goal that's exciting too, right? And getting stronger is a great feeling.
Well, and I know that was the reason why I wanted you on here today, because of the level of which you have trained. And I know from my experience with you that there were many days I did not want to go and see you, as much as I enjoyed your company outside of the whole pain thing. But you're right. And thank you for saying that. I really did invest my time. And yes, my finances, because I knew it was important for me to get to a certain level of health. And I look back at what I achieved with you it was amazing. I've never been that fit. I'm working on it again. Your approach to it was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. lots of good times. All right. So, and I think too, like just talking about that investment part was why, like amongst the horse world, and I think we can share that your wife is an equestrian. She's a very serious dressage rider, right?
Absolutely.
So you know the frame of mind, I don't want to call it an addiction, but it is a serious passion for horse people. So you know what it's like when your wife is focused on preparing for a show season, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when it comes to riding, I mean, the thing is, riders always set very serious goals for themselves, right? That they're always working towards, striving towards. And that's kind of the why, right? Behind, putting in all those hours. I mean, my wife wakes up every morning at 5 a.m. She's at the barn by 5:30, riding an hour before work, right? Home. And then, that's not where riding ends for her, right? Like she's always investing time in reading and learning. And it's a lifelong passion. I mean, it's very similar to rowing that way. It just never ends, right? Like once you get to the next level, you're going to try to progress to the one after that, right? Like you're just not going to stop, right? And it makes achieving those fitness goals easy as long as you can align them to the sport, right? There's a strong why there. I'm connecting these goals to my passion, right? And then that makes them a little bit easier to achieve. You know why you're going to the gym. You know why you're focusing on nutrition and sleep and managing your stress and just trying to find that balance, right, within the whole equation of fitness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so here we go. I mean, a lot of people have a hard time venturing into this because it's intimidating. Here I am mentioning the pain. Well, so some people are just like, I don't want to deal with that. So many people find this whole approaching fitness and nutrition intimidating or overwhelming, just depending on how you want to put it. What is your definition of intimidating in this type of situation?
Well, I can talk from personal experience. You know, the first time I walked into a gym, everybody looks like they know, they look like they know what they're doing, right? They're all treadmills doing their workouts, the ellipticals, people are throwing weights around. You know, these are exercises I've never seen in my life, right? Everybody seems to be in like little groups and talking to each other. And you're like, where do I even begin? Right? So you just kind of show up and kind of do this machine and then that machine and jump on the treadmill for 15 minutes and maybe I should do some stretching and some abs. People seem to be doing that, right? And you kind of walk around there aimlessly. And yeah, it's an intimidating experience, right? Like when you don't quite know what you're doing. And that's why I think it's important. And, you know, I will say the large fitness chains, especially Good Life, they're very good at sitting down with their new members, trying to understand, right, what their initial goals are, and then putting them on some basic level program just to start working towards those and giving them some level of guidance, right? But the important thing is you have to know what you're aiming for, right? Otherwise, you're never going to get there, right? There's a lot of people that just kind of, they show up to the gym because they just want to be a little bit fitter, right? And then, you know, when riding, okay, well, you know, my legs have been tired and they've been kind of bothering me. So maybe I should do some leg work. Maybe I should do this. Maybe I should do that. But that doesn't really work within fitness. You need to set some actual concrete goals. So an example would be if, you know, weight loss, right, was a goal of yours. It's not just good enough to say, hey, I want to lose a little bit of weight, right? You have to say, no, I want to lose 10 pounds, right, by this date, right? Set a plan as to how you're going to get there, right? And then, you know, work that plan, right, the whole way through until you attain that goal. If you just show up and say, hey, I'm just here for some weight loss, you're going to wander around aimlessly, and then you kind of lose motivation, right? It's just not exciting anymore to like kind of show up to the gym. And then, yeah, it's not just intimidating, but it's also just kind of stressful, right? Like you feel like you're putting in all this time and you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. So goal setting is very important to kind of over, you know, come some of those feelings and give you something else to sort of focus on.
Yeah.
And if you're really not sure what you're doing, I definitely recommend you talk to a personal trainer, right? Well, because they'll give you some guidance to get
to those goals. And I feel like, you know, like with my guidance and I've had with you and, you know, my brother, Rob, you know, Rob, and then Patrick, who I'm working with now, you know, they're all like, well, Tracy, you've been doing this for so long. You surely could figure something out for yourself, right? Like, do I really need a trainer? And my answer is to that, yes, I need a trainer, because I don't feel like at the end of the day, that is one more thing that I want or need to think about myself, right? Like I will show up and I will put in the work and I will put in the commitment. But I need somebody else to guide me. Do you see that a lot?
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes it's just that you need an accountability partner, right? You need somebody to hold you to the schedule, right? And to working towards, right? Like a goal, and to continually do measurements and assessments and to determine, you know, you always have to figure out, well, what's the starting point? What's the end point, right? And then from that, how long is it going to take to get there? And then you have to stick to that plan, right? And I think just to go back quickly to the intimidating thing, I think a major reason people are intimidated by fitness is because the things that they've tried in the past have all been really, really difficult, right? So, you know, they've said, okay, I'm going to sign up for a learn to run 5K program, right? It's like 12 weeks. And, you know, they don't even walk, right? Regularly, right? Like you hardly get off the couch. You sit at our desks all day, right? You're not really conditioned at all, right? And then before you know it, you're running. Right. And it's just always, always hard. And a big reason why people get into something like that is because, you know, you go into Shoppers Drug Mart, you look at the magazine rack, you see a Runner's World, and you're like, yeah, I want to look like that. Right. That's exactly what I want. I'm going to start running. right? The problem with that is it's very difficult, right, to burn enough calories, right, within running, right, to start to drive, you know, fat loss, right, and start to work towards your goals if you've never run before. So at best, you can run maybe 15 kilometers a week, right, when you're first starting, right? So, you know, you go out for the run, you kill yourself for 30 minutes, right? Like you get your 5K in, it takes you 4 days to recover basically, right? Because your legs are so sore, you're just not conditioned for this, right? You do it again, right? Like you can barely get 3K in and you're like, okay, well, whatever. I'll just do a shorter run the next day, the next day, the next day. And then, you know, you struggle through the 15K through the week, right? The other thing that you could do, right, which is much, much, much easier, is just start a walking program.
Right.
Right. I'm not sure if you know this, but how many calories do you burn running 3 miles versus walking 3 miles? Will we answer that?
I didn't know that there was going to be a quiz, Ryan, but I'm going to guess. How about the same?
It is the same.
Okay.
It's the same. Wow. Right. You cover 3 miles walking, you cover 3 miles running, you burn the same number of calories.
That's crazy.
Okay. So to walk 3 miles is an hour. Okay. So over the course of a week, right, you could walk an hour every single day.
Yeah.
Right. You've covered 21 miles. Okay. Wow. If you try to run 21 miles in a week and you've never done it, good luck.
Yeah.
Right. It's going to be very, very difficult and not enjoyable. Not enjoyable whatsoever. And when walking, by the way, does a lot for stress management, mm-hmm. right? It will do a lot for helping you sleep at night, right? So it takes care of like all the other boxes as well.
So basically your advice is whatever you do, just start smaller, start something that you can actually develop a habit into doing on a daily basis, right?
Exactly.
Or
exactly.
3 to 4 times a week, even like just work your way up to it.
Yeah. I'll modify that a little bit. I would say do something every day.
Okay.
Right? Because then you can start forming like a more solid habit. Because if you were, say, your plan was to go 3 days a week, right? And you miss one of those days, you've missed 33% of your workouts that week. Right. But if you're shooting for 7 and life gets in the way for one day, right? You've got 6 days.
Yeah, that's right? True.
Yeah. Okay. And somebody's going to say, okay, well, it's just not going to work for me. Right. I don't have the time. Right. There's no possible way I could schedule this. Look, I understand. Right. My wife and I both work full time. We've got twin boys. Right. It is difficult. Right. But to schedule.
Yeah.
But what you want to do is just, it's better to deal with something that's difficult to schedule than difficult to do. Right. When you're first starting.
That is a great way of looking at it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So along that line, when talking about your goals, so it doesn't matter what type of athlete you are or what your goals are. There's that, again, the level of intimidation to try to overcome. So how do you engender the trust of someone when they come to you with a goal and you say to them, you can do this? Like, how do you help them through that time where they question, like, can I really achieve what I want to achieve?
Yeah, well, that all starts off with a conversation around, you know, what is your goal, right? And then we have to have a conversation. I always follow the SMART goal setting model. So if you're not sure what the SMART goal setting model is, I'll send you a link, right? You can share it through the podcast. But basically, it's an acronym, right? SMART stands for goals have to be specific. Right. So, you know, as I said before, like if it was weight loss, you can't just say, I want to lose some weight. Right. It's got to be, no, I want to lose 10 pounds. Right. So then it's a specific goal. Right. It's measurable. Right. We know exactly what you need to do. We have to determine if it's attainable. Right. So, you know, if somebody says, you know, I want to lose 10 pounds, but they don't have a pound to lose. Right. Then it's just not attainable. Right?
Right.
And then, you know, realistic, right, would be the next thing. So is it a realistic goal? Well, yeah, we've determined it's attainable. So then it's realistic. And then it has to be time bound. We have to put some sort of time limit on it. right? So, and that's got to be realistic as well, right? We can't say, okay, I got to lose 10 pounds by Sunday. Well, today's Saturday, it's not going to happen, right? So we have to, you know, you have to set that around, well, safe weight loss is around 1 to 2 pounds a week, right? So let's just go to the lower number, right? Just to keep it, you know, realistic, especially if somebody's getting into fitness. So we say, I'm going to do this over a 10-week period. So I'm going to average out a pound weight loss a week, right? I'm going to follow this diet to do this, right? And there's a lot of great apps out there, like MyFitnessPal, you know, when we were training, right? Like we'd have to get out the calculators and go to the internet and look up the calories and like figure all these things out and how much protein's in here and how much fat and how many carbs, right? You don't have to do any of that anymore, right? You can just get MyFitnessPal or like any one of these great apps. And, you know, whichever diet you're picking, right, to work with, your body and your own needs, whether it be keto or Mediterranean or, you know, something a little bit more traditional, right? They all can work, right? But you've got to find the one that works best for you.
Yeah.
That's very important. And then just track it, just log everything and follow this plan over 10 weeks and work towards it.
Okay. So helping them figure out what their goal is.
Yes.
And then, cause I'm sure, cause I remember too, like you'd ask me to do some stuff and I'd be like, what? Yeah. Really? There was such a huge amount of trust that I had to have in you. So that when you said, yeah, Trace, I want you to lift this now. And I'd be like, whoa, or, you know, those really dreaded, what were they? The front elevated foot squat things that I think I cursed and swore through the whole entire time. But yeah, like there's definitely a trust factor there that when you told me to do something, I just did it because I knew you had the plan.
Yes. And you have to remember too, trainers have worked with people of, you know, all levels, right? You know, personally, I've worked for, with beginners all the way up to Olympians, right? So you see certain patterns and then you also learn different personalities and different body types, right? And, you know, from that, right? Like you can kind of, you start to learn like what type of program will work best for that specific person.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can make recommendations based on that. And you're right. It does require a lot of trust, but trust isn't something that's just gained off of that very first meeting, right? Trust is gained once the client starts seeing results, right? Once they start seeing the results, right, that you say they will get, right, from following this program, then trust builds.
Yeah.
Right. So that's really how you gain a client or an athlete's trust.
Nice. Yeah. And how did you, so just to ask a little sort of beginner versus Olympian thing, like somewhere in the, let's just say, what did you have those Olympians kind of thing? Like, were there obvious goals? There was the Olympics. What about their personalities? Like we all, I don't know, there's so many riders out there that have these goals that are struggling to deal with their fitness. What kind of mindset did you find working with the Olympians was like? Like, are they quote unquote just like us?
No.
So, darn it. Okay.
No. And they're different in the way that they're genetically gifted. Right. Like every single Olympian I've ever met. Right. Like, and it does differ sport to sport. Right. But they are very genetically gifted. And the other thing about them too, is if anything, you have to hold them back. Right. Mm. Because they want to do too much. I mean, I've had rowers that if you let them, they would train 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. Right. I mean, they would be pushing 40 hours of training. Right. And it's just overkill. They don't need to do anywhere near that. Right, to achieve the goal that they're marching towards. So sometimes with the Olympians, it's actually a little bit of a different story, okay. Right? Where the client, you have to push and say, no, it's okay, right? You can put in this level of intensity, right? You're not gonna hurt yourself. The Olympian, you have to say, well, no, dial it back a little bit, right? You are gonna hurt yourself, right? They're a little bit more, they're risk takers. Right? They'll hear your advice and they'll do 20% more than that, thinking more is better. right? So
okay, so but I think maybe I might challenge you on this just a bit.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, because riders, I say this with all love and respect, are so crazy and focused about what they want to do. So here's the thing, right? Because I find over all these years of being in the barn and listening to riders talk about the struggle they have with being more fit or more toned or working on their body so their body is better for their jobs, but they are so focused. They're riding like what, 2, 3, 8 horses a day. So they're like, in a way, you kind of have to hold them back a little bit because they have that mentality, I do believe, but at the same time, what they're putting all their time into isn't necessarily what's going to get them better for that job. It's a little complicated. Did you follow me?
Yeah, you know, I think I followed you. Please correct me if I'm kind of going off track a little bit, but I think, you know, I'm not a riding coach, right? So I can't speak specifically to, you know, how to coach a rider, right? Like, and it is a different sport, right? Please don't shoot me, right? It's lower intensity, right? Yes. Compared to something like Olympic weightlifting, okay? Right? That's kind of the easiest way to visualize it. So, you know, but there can be overkill in everything, right? Yeah. You can do too much. Right. And especially, I think you have to be like definitely in the right headspace for riding. Right. And if you're just doing too much, you kind of get to that mental burnout sort of stage. Right. Where nothing seems to be working. Right. And whatever, and you can get lost in your own head. And, you know, riding is one of those sports that can rent a lot of free space in your head. Right. Yeah. Even when you're not on the horse. Right.
And it's very, very endurance based. And it is, it's a thinking sport all the time dealing with that other live entity.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So do you think, based sort of on this part of the conversation and dealing with the reality of riders and where they are day to day, do you think that people undervalue the importance of basic self-care?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so people, what I've really noticed is people tend to focus on what's urgent and not what's important.
Ooh, okay. Good.
And what I mean by that is we have a lot of daily tasks that have some inbuilt urgency to them. And this could be a wide variety of things, right? But they're not really important to get done. But if you're kind of like that driver type A personality, it feels great completing those tasks. And you can ascribe urgency to anything. It could just be like, you know, eggs are on sale at Shoppers Drug Mart, right? Like, I better get there this morning because by 10 a.m. they're usually out. So I know I've got to go over there, right? And you complete all these urgent tasks and it feels good, right? Getting those done, but it's not as important as your fitness goals, right? Like, you shouldn't forego, like, you have to kind of develop like a hierarchy of importance, right? So, you know, here's my goal, right? These are the non-negotiables, right? This is what I absolutely have to do every day, right? To get to it, right? And if you start and missing out on those things, right? Then you're really now focusing on, you know, more of those kind of urgent items and not the important ones. And a lot of people get into that, right? And you get to this point where, you know, you feel like you're spinning your wheels, right? Because you're getting a lot done, but you're not moving forward, right?
Yes, it's getting stuff done, but is it being productive? Or is it getting you closer to your goals, like you just said? But, you know,
well, you always have that feeling like you don't have enough time in the day.
Yes.
Right? And then you might do things like, oh, I always waste so much time going through my email inbox, trying to find things and I can't search them. So, you know what? I'm going to establish a bunch of folders, right? And I'm going to start dragging things into folders and creating rules and doing all these things to, you know, make sure I'm more organized, right? Like, people spend a lot of time trying to get organized, right?
Yes.
To try to buy themselves more time.
Yes.
Right. And you really don't have to do that stuff, right? But it feels great when you do, right? But it's spinning your wheels, right? It's not important to organize your inbox.
And I know that so many riders, like let's say the professionals, I mean, it is their business, it is their livelihood. So there are so many other elements outside of riding that need to be kept up on and stuff. And then you take like amateurs, like your wife, who it's, you know, she's got one horse that she's seriously riding. But yeah, she's got to look at, so these amateur owners with, or one horse owners, they've got to plan the rest of their lives around their commitment to their horse. And I would agree that a lot of them try to put in some sort of effort as a physical part of themselves as well to be more fit for their riding.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, but yeah, it's there's so much that gets in the way, but hold that thought because that is a question later on. Okay. So when you and I worked together, it was the heavier weightlifting. You had me doing all sorts of stuff, and the changes that my body went through was just amazing. And it wasn't just the physical. You had me sort of restart myself with the food and the importance of fueling myself. And I think we used the app, I think, way back then. And then, you know, doing the food diary. I mean, as simple and as, you know, prehistoric as that sounds, it really is helpful if people are like, just like to write stuff down. So along that line, like the whole nutrition aspect of it, I would like to argue, and I'm not saying I'm perfect by any means. It's a constant learning curve with me, with my schedule and all this kind of stuff. And again, it always comes down to schedule. So if I'm at the barn and I'm massaging, and I could be there for 5 or 6 hours and not see anybody stop to fuel themselves. And that's kind of concerning because these people are doing physical jobs and it's an all day thing and they get caught up in the scheduling. So the question is balanced nutrition a mindset? Is that something that people need to adopt or change for themselves?
Yes, it is a mindset in a way, because you have to make that decision, right? That you're going to follow a plan and stick to it, right? So you do have to get your head around that. But there were a lot of kind of easy hacks that you can incorporate, right? That make it easier.
Easy hacks are great.
Yeah. The first thing you have to do is you have to base the diet on your body type, right? So if you're somebody that, you know, gains weight easily, right? Like, especially if you're eating like carbohydrates, then yeah, you have to pick a diet that is lower, right, in carbohydrates. So whether that's just the traditional low carb, right? Like, just make sure that you don't, you know, eat more than 20 grams of net carbs a day, or it's keto, right? That's a really popular diet right now, or Mediterranean. So, you know, just is a little bit higher fat. It's not quite as low carb, right? That's helpful for that body type. If you're somebody who's skinny, no matter what, right? But you need to fuel yourself. That's a person that actually requires more carbs, right? So, you know, you wouldn't have known this from our training. I mean, I'm definitely somebody who has to watch how many carbs I eat, right? Like, I can't eat too many. You know, you're in that same boat, right? So like, you know, our diet would be different than somebody who has that, you know, that naturally kind of skinny body type, right? Like, I mean, the person who can't really gain weight, and the training programs are different too, right? So they're modified based on, you know, somebody's body type. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is you have to determine, you know, what diet is going to work best for you, right? But because everybody usually wants to know about weight loss, once you find that diet that's going to work with your lifestyle and your life, the first thing I would do is find, you know, about 10 meals, right, that are easy to prepare, right? Because the thing is, if you think about it, if you write down a 7-day food journal, you're going to discover very quickly, right? That you only have about, you know, two or three meal options per mealtime. So if you're somebody that eats like three times a day, it's probably only two or three things you eat for breakfast, maybe only one, right? Two or three things for lunch and two or three things for dinner. So you just have to build out 10 options that fit your diet plan and stick to that. Just don't break it, right? That's it. And then the second thing, if you're trying to lose weight, is following an intermittent fasting schedule. Right. That is one of the easiest ways, right? It's been so effective for people that I've had people not change anything about their diet, but just eat within a time-restricted window. So they say, you know, I'm not going to eat for 16 hours, right? And then I have an 8-hour window to eat. So in between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., that's when I can eat. Outside of that window, no food. The nice thing about that is you do not need to reduce your calories and you'll have an effect. So if somebody right now is eating, you know, 3,000 calories a day, right? And, you know, because they have big energy requirements, they're riding horses all day, they're running around, right? Like they've got kids, right? So they're just always on the go. They're always active. They're also doing a fitness program, right? So they're eating 3,000 to support that. If they were eating that unrestricted all throughout the day, and they just brought those 3,000 calories into an 8-hour window, they'll lose weight, right? So because, and the reason they do is because, you know, when you're taking food in, you're storing, right? Some of those calories as energy, they get stored as liver glycogen, muscle glycogen. So that's just carbohydrates basically stored, right? And then as you're burning them through activities and throughout the day, you have about a 12 or 14 hour store, right? Like of that. And then once it's out, you're relying more on body fat, right, for your energy. So with a 16 hours of not eating and 8-hour eating window, right, in that 16 hours, there's a good 2 or 3 hours where you're burning a high amount of body fat, right? And you just do that several times through the week. And it's really, really easy to lose a pound or two a week.
Okay. So perhaps those busy riders that are, you know, overwhelmed with their day might incorporate that portion of their fasting, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, depending on when you wake up, right? Like you might, let's just imagine somebody's riding in between. Well, when would you ride? When you ride? Like,
well, I don't know. I think that, you know, depending after chores and stuff, let's say that the busiest day for riding, like on an average day, not at a horse show, might be like from 9 till 3 or 9 till 4. And please forgive me if I'm wrong on that, but based on years in the barn, that's kind of maybe the average busy span.
Yeah. Yeah. So in something like that, you can wake up, right? Like, and just skip breakfast, have a coffee, right? Go for, you know, that first few rides, right? And then your eating would start at, say, noon, right? So right then, right, you could have your first meal, right? Complete the rest of the rides. And then you could have, the second large meal right after that. And oh, by the way, with intermittent fasting, 2 large meals a day is very satisfying, very fulfilling, right? So if you're, you know, you determine, okay, I need to eat 2,000 calories, right? Like a day, right? To lose weight, right? 2 1,000 calorie meals. They are very satisfying meals, right? You know, on previous diet plans, I know when they were, 6 to 8 meals a day was popular. Those were like 250 calorie snacks, right? Like, I mean, that's like a handful of almonds, right? Like you never feel satisfied. You never feel full, right? But like 2 1,000 calorie meals, like in your day, right? That's quite a bit of food, right? You're very satisfied after each meal and you can wait like 6 hours before you eat again.
Right.
You don't have to get those 3 square meals a day. Like once you get into this way of eating, right? And your body starts to learn like how to draw more body fat as energy. Yeah. You'll find that energy's level, right? And you're losing weight and you're working towards your goal.
The hard time is finding, because if you're used to eating small and you're used to eating, you know, sort of like, you know, as you're grazing of the metaphor there, you're grazing throughout the day. Trying to find the time to sit and eat and actually eat an entire 1,000 calories, that might feel overwhelming. It's like, oh my goodness, I'm not used to eating that much.
Yeah, you know, and it could, and you actually bring up a very good point there, right? It's good to have a transition period, right? Like into a diet. And I mean, when we were doing, say, keto or the modified low carb, right? We used to call that the fat adaptation phase,
yep.
Right? So for 2 weeks, right? You ate no carbs. You were allowed, you know, 10 licks of a dried apricot. That's it. Okay.
Those were all the carbs. It was horrible. You know?
And it's awful. But what it did is it gets you into fat burning mode. Right. And then when you introduce some carbs, you can do it in a sort of a safe way. So you transition into it over a 2 week period. So if somebody was only used to eating like 250 calories at a time, no, don't just go eat a 1,000-calorie meal. Right. You're going to feel sick. Right. You would start with a 500 calories, something a little bit bigger. And, you know, there's creative ways of getting those calories in too. Right. Yeah. And that's through healthy fat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, all this is, you know, taking me back a lot of all the stuff that I've learned from you over the years. Yes. And, you know, a lot of it I still incorporate and I think of every day and, you know, have taken along with me. So, yeah, it's been awesome. I remember that when we did that 2 week fat adaptation phase. Oh, my gosh. I think I've done it a total of 3 times. And the first time I did it, I was bound and determined. Like I was not going to be successful in this. And at the end of like the 15th day or whatever it was, you're like, all right, Trace, you can have whatever you want. It's your cheat day. And I was so excited for that cheat day. I'm like, I think I got like chocolate covered almonds. I had like sugar donuts or something. And the first donut I put in my mouth, it tasted like tin. It was the awful. Most disappointing thing, but it just went to show me that how much my body changed what it craved, what it needed for fuel and for exercise when you took all that crap away.
Absolutely.
Was amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really amazing. And you can adapt, right, to a whole different set of foods. And, you know, some of those things you could, you know, not imagine starting your day with, right? Like, are all of a sudden, you can't even think about eating them, right? Like, I used to have like a large double-double, right? Or extra large double-double, like every single morning. I can't even think about ordering one of those now. The idea of it makes me sick, but you kind of get used to it. You can get used to healthier foods as well.
Right? Yeah.
So it just takes time. It takes a little bit of adaptation. And, you know, by the way, if, you know, people out there are thinking about doing something like a low carb diet, I do recommend starting with that fat adaptation phase where you basically eat zero carbs for 2 weeks. You're not going to feel great for the first 4 days, but, you know, you start to get used to it after that. And then your energy levels come back up and they remain stable. They remain stable through the whole thing. And I mean, I've seen people lose, you know, 8-9 pounds, right? Like in that first 2 weeks, right? And I know it's not fat, right? Like any quick change in weight is water, right? But that's the level of inflammation people have from eating certain types of food, right? And so when that inflammation reduces, people feel great, right? All of a sudden you're like, wow, this is, I feel like lighter, I feel better. And it's like, you were carrying around a lot of water.
That is a good point. That's all linked to inflammation.
Yes.
Okay. So taking people's, you know, how do you temper people's expectations of themselves? Whether like that can be like a double-sided question depending on what their expectations are, but how do you help temper these?
Yeah. So I can tell a personal story with that because, you know, when I first got into rowing and I was going up through the levels, I mean, my immediate, you know, young guy, 15 years old, right? You start to set like these really lofty goals for yourself. And it's like, you know, you just finished this, you know, your first high school race and you're like, I'm going to the Olympics, right? So you kind of have this far off goal, right? Like in your mind. And it's, you have to make, I'm not saying it's not possible to get there, right? So I don't want to, you know, just say, no, your dream's not possible, right? It very well may be, but you have to kind of set like these intermediate goals and treat it like a series of steps, right? So, okay, this is the tower I want to climb, right? The Olympics are on step 10. Okay, what's step one, step two, step three? You have to break it down into mini goals, right? And you know, at worst, right, you're going to get to the highest level possible for you, right? And that's great, right? That's something that should be celebrated, right? Yeah. So I just, keep those dreams in mind, but you know, you have to kind of build like a step-by-step plan, right, to get there. And it's more exciting that way too, right? Because I think sometimes people don't celebrate the achievements, right? Those mm-hmm. achievements all the way up, right? And they should be celebrated. You should feel good about them because it's something you've never done before.
Yeah.
Right? So
it's well, exciting. And I'm loving this conversation from obviously a couple of different ways, but the aspect too that, yes, you are a trainer, but you're also a coach. So the coaching aspect involves more than just the physical, here is your plan and I'm going to guide you through this. I'm sure you get people's, like their everyday lives come into play. I know I wasn't an Olympian or a varsity rower or anything, but there were a couple of big hits to my life when I'd walk in your front door and, you helped me sort of through that as well. You had to take that into consideration for that workout that day. And especially like with my life coaching, you know, the whole idea of setting goals and, you know, helping people not only achieve them, but yes, in some cases, temper them a little bit to make them more realistic. So success is more available, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to make it realistic. And I mean, sometimes people need, a little bit of a reality check, unfortunately, right? Like I can remember one specific client at Good Life. This would have been like, year 2006, whatever. This guy had just watched the movie 300, right? Like, and everybody's ripped in that movie. Everybody has a six pack, right? Like they all look great. And he's like, Ryan, you gotta help me with this, right? And I'm just like, well, here's the thing, right? We all have different body types, right? Is the reality. And you have to, kind of embrace the one you have, right? Like, and one thing I like to tell people all the time is, because Runner's World always came up for me as a trainer, right? Like somebody would get a copy of Runner's World and say like, I want to look like this person. And I'm like, well, the thing is running didn't make that body, right? That person had that body and they were good at running, right? And that's it, right? Like they pretty much look like that before they started running, right? So you always have to be, realistic. Like personally, I can never look like a marathon runner. It's impossible. My skeleton weighs more than those guys, right? Like it's just not reality. So if you're, again, back to that kind of smart goal setting, that's a big part about, right? Is it a realistic goal, right? For you.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to sit down and think about that.
Like, well, I mean, bringing up the different body types, is key, I think too, like in the equestrian world, not mm-hmm. everybody is built the same, but everybody still has the same passion and interest and stuff. And I learned that from you. I mean, I think it was my time with you when I finally, quote unquote, accepted the fact that I'm built for power and speed. That was, so when you had me doing that heavy lifting and working on all of that stuff, I'm like, man, this is my area, my zone of genius. This is what my body needs. Me going for a run, not my thing. Everybody has a different body type. And I mean, you and I, we worked. So I was down to like 18% body fat. It was someplace that...
And by the way, too, for the listeners out there, right, for an athletic female, right, the average body fat range is 16 to 20%. So you were right in that athletic range, right? That was an extremely great place to be.
Right? It was amazing. But I got to tell you, because my mindset, I dealt with weight, quote unquote, issues all my life. I do believe it's finally coming down to the point of accepting who I am and doing the best that I can with it and the goals I want to achieve. But it was funny, Ryan, because looking back over that time, like I'm no longer 18% body fat, but I'm still busting my butt to get back to as close to that as I can at the age of 50 now. Right. But I don't think I knew what I had when I had it. I don't think my mindset was in that space that was able to go, huh, we are now 18% body fat, when I kind of grew up the whole time feeling like I was not fit, like heavier person. So I think that's a whole other conversation as far as, you know, working with and accepting one's body type and on that kind of stuff. But yeah. I feel like that's something that's pretty prominent out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And I mean, body acceptance is a difficult thing for people. And I think especially for women, right? Like with all the stuff out in the media, right? Like about, just look at the cover of any magazine, right? It's yeah. ridiculous, right? And it's not that those aren't realistic body types. It's just a realistic body type for that person, yeah. right? That's what it is, right? Like, so you, again, right? Like your goals, whatever they are, right? Like they have to be realistic for you, right? You know, like I said, never going to be a marathon runner, right? Not a competitive one. A competitive one. I can find a way to do it, right? It might hurt my knees a little bit, but you know, I'm not winning Boston Marathon or anything like that.
Yeah.
But when it came to weightlifting, yeah, I can win one of those events, right? And marathon runners has no chance, right?
Exactly, so, yeah. Exactly. We all have our zone of genius.
We all have our different strengths, right? And you got to find out what yours are, right? So yeah. It's really important. And once you do, right? And that's why the program I had you on was aligned to what your strengths were, yeah. right? Because then it's exciting, right? Oh. Then it's something that you look forward to, even if it's difficult, right? Mm-hmm. You know it's achievable,
yeah.
right? You know you can struggle your way through it, right? But if I said, okay, well, we're going to put you on a program where you're going to have to run a half marathon, right? Like you're going to quit like in 6 weeks.
Yuck. Right? Exactly. Yeah, and I know whenever I was having a bad day, like, and I was training with you, and yes, Rob did train for you or with you as well for a few years. You know, whenever I was feeling down or had a really crappy day, both of you were like, "All right, let's go throw some heavy stuff around." Let's
absolutely,
yeah, and it always helped.
Yeah, and this is a great example, right? And some people, what they need is they need to go on a 10K run, mm-hmm. right? And that's what they need to feel better. And throwing weights around will never feel good for them, right? Some people are meant to chase after rabbits. Some people are meant to throw rocks at them, okay? That's it.
Oh, my goodness, Ryan. This has been awesome. So I have one last question.
Okay.
Basically, we know what we need to do to achieve our health and fitness. And in some cases, no. Like for coming for that fine-tuned, yeah. you know, knowledge and expertise, that's when people need to find people like you. But mm-hmm. we all know that if I want to lose some weight, I need to do more output than input. I need to move more. I need to be, you know, choosing healthier choices of food, etc. How do we keep everyday life from being an excuse?
You know what? That gets back to the focusing on what's important, okay. right? And not what's urgent, right? And so, you know, once you've set whatever the goal is for yourself, right? And you've set a schedule, right, to get there, right? You say, okay, well, I want to lose this amount of weight and this amount of time, and this is the amount of exercise. These are the sessions I'm going to have to complete in there to get there, and this is the diet I'm going to have to follow. It's just sticking to it, you know, every single day. Yeah. Can you slip up once in a while? Absolutely, right? Yeah. Like life will get in the way. But what tends to happen is somebody slips up on one day, and then that one day becomes two, and then three, and then four. And before you know it, you're off the program for a couple weeks, right? And then it's just a struggle to get back on, right? And then it's like, oh, I'm so far behind. And we just get into this negative mindset. So allow yourself one day, once in a while,
yeah.
right? To fall off of it. But the next day, get right back on it, right? Life will get in the way sometimes, right? Your car is going to break down. You're going to get a flat tire, you know? And I always use the analogy, like, sometimes you do get a flat tire, right? And it sucks, right? And you're gonna have to deal with it, right? But when you pull that car over to the side of the road, and you've got that flat tire, right? You call CAA or you get out the jack, and you put on the spare, right? The one thing you don't do is pop the other three tires, right? And that's what we tend to do with health and fitness, right? Like we just say, oh, I messed up. Like I was supposed to go low carb today, but it was, you know, so-and-so's birthday at work, right? So we all went out for lunch, right, on the Friday. And then that Friday, like, ends up going right until Monday, right? You blow the entire weekend. And then once you've done that, it's basically the whole week, right? So slip up for a meal, don't slip up for days.
That's nice. I like that metaphor. Don't pop the other three tires, just sort of get back on track.
That's right. It's not ideal. Nobody likes dealing with that situation. Just don't make it worse.
Well, and I think too, like in preparing this question, I have the opportunity of, you know, meeting so many people in different barns and, you know, the just the different conversations I might overhear. And it's so understandable. You know, one woman might be saying, after riding 6 or 7 horses in a day, there's no way I've got the energy to do a workout at the end of the day. And in the morning, I'm too sore from the day before to get up to do an exercise. So what do you say to that person?
Yeah. So what I say to that person is they're already doing quite a bit of exercise, right? But their diet, you know, just might not be aligned to it, right? Like if, say, weight loss was a goal, right? So they just might need to cut back on a few simple things right here, right? Like just switch, right? The nutrition program that they're on, right? Or put it under some sort of control, start tracking it on an app like MyFitnessPal, right? And then, you know, if you're truly riding that much in a day, you don't need to spend, you know, also 2 hours or an hour even in the gym, right? You can follow the weight program might be 15 minutes, right? And there's a lot of great ones out there, right? And it's just, you know, quick thing you do as soon as you wake up in the morning, right? And then, you know, maybe at the end of the day, right? Like if you haven't been riding quite as much, right? Walk for an hour, right? But the danger I would say that that person could fall into is if they're not tracking it properly, you won't really see the week where you only kind of do half as much, right? And then, you know, you're just kind of inconsistent in your activity levels. Like we can see this with rowers, by the way, all the time, right? So, you know, they get like a little injury or there's exams or, you know, labs or whatever, something gets in the way, life gets in the way somehow, right? And so this week they did 20 hours of activity. The next week they did 12, right? But their diet remained the same, right? Okay. So there always has, so there has to be tracking. Right. If you don't track it, it's you can't manage what you're not measuring.
Right.
Right. So it's very, very important to keep track of, you know, how many hours of riding you did that day, you know, other activities, walking, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Right. Because then you can actually see what's going on.
Well, and right? I guess
you'd be surprised.
Yeah. Right? And for this example, let's say, well, you're right. I mean, you're riding, let's say, 6 horses a day, that is a huge, you know, energy output. That's a lot of exercise. Yeah. But how about, like you said, maybe 15 minutes of weight? But I really think, what about stretching? Like, what if, you know, riders with this type, you know, because I mean, they're in the same position all day, every day, doing the same thing. Like, don't certain areas of their body need opening up? Like, if they had a stretching regime at night before they went to bed, they might not wake up so sore in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what's great about today's fitness world? YouTube.
Right.
You can just log on and look up 10 minute, 15 minute stretch, 20 minute stretch. Just keep it on a playlist and say, you know, every night before bed, just to unwind, right? To relax a little bit so I can get a better sleep, right? It helps with stress as well. You know, throw on a 15 minute you know, YouTube on yoga, meditation, stretching, right? Just something to, you know, relax. And as you said, right, like if you're dealing with chronic tightness, then yeah, I would put on a 15 minute stretching video every single night before bed. Super easy to do.
Yeah. You just got to commit to it.
Absolutely. Put it in the schedule with everything else. I mean, riding makes it into the schedule. You can put other things in that calendar as well.
Yeah. And especially when these riders are, like, let's say pros or with big goals and have potential, then, you know, commit to making your body better, because, you know, we all know as you get older, your body starts telling you that you're not looking after yourself. And I think, you know, there's so many people that want to stay in the saddle for as long as they can.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as you're aging, you have to focus on mobility. You do have to focus on stretching. That needs to be a larger part of your program, right? When I was in high school, I don't think I stretched once unless our coach forced us, and I didn't need it. I really didn't, right? Like just doing a sport was enough of a stretch, right? When it came to rowing, right? But as the years went on, right, you start to notice like a little bit more tightness in your neck, right? And shoulders, and stretch the muscles that you need to stretch, right? Like you don't want to, like there's no sense in stretching your quads if they're not tight, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're like, for me, right, quads never tight, hamstrings all the time, right? So there's no sense in stretching both, right? I just need to focus in on the muscle groups, right, that need that attention and that have, you know, I have a limited range of motion on because of muscle tightness.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, thank you for your expertise and your knowledge. I always love connecting with you.
Thank you very much, Tracy. It was very nice to connect with you as well today. And I hope we get a chance to do this again in the future.
Absolutely. I might have you back and we can get a little more in depth on some topics. I'll reach out to my listeners, maybe see what they want to, you know, find out more about.
And maybe do
a part two at some point.
Yeah, we can take a deeper dive on, you know, any topic that the listeners are interested in talking about.
Absolutely. Where can people reach you if they want to reach out and ask you some questions?
Well, you can always reach me by email. That is ryan_mitra@hotmail.com. I'll send you that after the podcast too, so you can maybe put it in the comments, right? Absolutely. That is really the absolute best way to reach me.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you for taking time out of your Saturday for me.
Of course. Anytime, Tracy.
Okay. So there you have it. For future episodes, I have some amazing interviews lined up, hoping to open and engage the horse world on issues and topics of interest in and out of the show ring. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. You can subscribe to the podcast for new episodes of Hitting Your Stride on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. You can check me out on Facebook and Instagram, and feel free to share whatever you've heard here with your friends. For that, I would be very grateful.